When many good things are to happen, we have to go through such, you know, tumult. Mrs. Day, yeah, Mrs. Ia, she's one of our staff members. She has just fallen now. Missed a step, but then nothing. There are no case of any sickness. She just missed a step, and then she fell. She's recovering. Good morning to everybody.
Good morning.
Our meeting was scheduled to start at 9 initially, and later on we had to change to 10 due to an emergency that we had to attend to. As the ANC, a component of this committee. And then we did request and information did go out. It went out yesterday, late yesterday. I was trying to inquire Kebekul, who indicated that he did not get the communique. Other members did get it, including myself. Apologies for such inconvenience, also for some of us who came here for the 9 o'clock, we're here at 9 o'clock. I would have loved to say that in advance as well, but I'm told Mrs. Kakazo is quite sufficient in advance. That's the situation we are in. We did go through such an exercise before, where every department has come before us to indicate to us about their state of readiness for the fishing rider location. At that time, there were some issues that were still fluid. In other words, there were some issues that still needed to be tightened up. And I'm also informed that we shall get a situation where the department will enlighten us further if there are any such areas that still need to be tightened up. Well, one of those is the matter that relates to the legislation itself, the amendment that relates to the allocation, amendment on Marine Living Resource Act. And maybe before we go into the issues themselves, whilst Mrs. Tia is recuperating, we shall go through two processes, one of having to do the housekeeping in terms of who is here and who is not here. We have apologies, both from the Minister and the Deputy Minister and also the DG, but the Deputy Director General is here. We shall get back to the phones that ring from time to time, and we shall also indicate to everyone here that phones are not allowed to ring, number one. We shall get to that point. Number two, phones are not allowed to be answered in a meeting of a committee of parliament. We shall get to that point. We're not there yet. And when we get to that point, the phones shall be all off or on silence. If you drink so that you do not disturb us, you walk quietly outside and answer it outside. But in a ideal situation is that we do not answer calls. We switch off our phone, our cell phones inside any parliamentary meeting, whether it is a committee or otherwise. We have the Mr. Gayle as well, who had apologized that he cannot make it. And also Mrs. Twala. Mrs. Twala has had her son operated. He has been admitted in hospital. This morning she has to go back on some administration related to that hospitalization. A message came from Mrs. Stain. Mrs. Stain is one of our members of parliament. She happens to sit in our committee. She is here in front of us. Her father was ill. She wants to, in her own words, I'm sure she's capable of doing that, saying something very briefly.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I just want to thank the members and committee for sending flowers. My father is better, he's back at home, but he's still very frail, and I just want to thank you and also for my father and my mother for flowers.
Thank you. but that's the kind of care you might wish to have, not project, but have as colleagues who work together. Our immediate families, we reach out to all of us. And really begin to show care and demonstrate it as we meet. That should be it for now, insofar as the apologies and related. Perhaps the one other part that I thought before we start, we should just quickly round up is a matter that relates to the Gazette of some of the functions of Kundalini force as having been shifted out of dark to environment. We thought that we should have that briefing for next week. Maybe just before we get into the session that deals with the vessels, we quickly take, you know, perhaps an hour, and then we get that one over with our back. What we shall do, we shall request the committee secretary to make copies of that gazette, and then we take it from there. I think it will be important and prudent on ourselves to read that gazette before we make any statements about it. If there is nothing else except for the matter that is before us, the matter before us as a committee is a matter that relates to the briefing by the committee, by the department rather, to the committee, on the readiness, state of readiness of the department in rolling out those fishing right allocations. Mrs. Steyn?
Yes, just on that, I think, Chairperson, we have outstanding matters that we can't deal with now, but I think we must deal with it. It's a matter with our research staff, because it's just empowering us that we don't get any documents from our research staff, and it's really not helping us at this stage, that we do have people, but they're not functioning at the moment.
Let's deal with that in our next meeting. So we have it on our agenda. Okay, thanks. Members, we had a lively debate last week. I'm sure some of us who might have followed that. It was quite an enlightening debate. This is a debate. Lapho bese faka isitambu sikalukhuli kuleya budget kathambo kwiveke epheleleyo. Now besithi ke sitsho ke uba bilibe kumnandi sathetha into ezininzi ke. I would have loved to say that in Afrikaans as well. Afghans as ne by a foot, a procurement, a little bit, you know. And last year, concerned the budget for years, you know. As a letter, you know, he repeated it. And foot is so sad, you know, but it's not nah. Members, I think we should, without waste of time, go straight to the issues. The department is to table to us a briefing on their state of readiness on the fish right allocation of fish. There are 8 of those issues. You also outline those, and then you take us through. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. It's an honor and privilege for us to present to you as the esteemed Portfolio Committee. But please allow me, before I start, also on behalf of our department, wish Honorable Member Steyn further speedy recovery of the illness. You and your family are in our prayers. Thank you very much. Chairperson, my name is Desmond Stevens. I'm the Acting Deputy Director General. I just want to introduce my team who's with me, and then we'll start.
Just apology on that one, just even. It was an oversight on my part, in fact, even in our last session, so that these things are not taken for granted. Desmond is now acting DDG. It's common knowledge by now that Mrs. Supergreen he is not with the department anymore. As a permanent DDG, that's the word I was looking for. It's common knowledge and everyone knows, it's no secret. We have now a different student who is acting. I just thought for Robert we should just date it so that it does not get to be, you know, a rumor forever. Though we should, in fact we are in the know of what is happening. I thought it should be said in a formal meeting that we have such a situation. We suppose have said it, in fact, even when we had the budget vote itself, or even the committee briefing by the department on the budget itself. I thought, you know, for purpose of, you know, formalizing this whole situation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As I said, I just want to maybe also for the record and for the information of the portfolio committee, introduce my team. On my far left is Dr. Motsheki Slatswayo. He's the Chief Director of Aquaculture and Economic Development. Next to him is Ms. Lindy Bota. She's our Acting CFO for the Marine Living Resources Fund. Ms. Sue Middleton, Chief Director for Fishery Operations Support. Next to Sue is Mr. Trevor Matoba. He's the Chief Director for Surveillance and Monitoring Control and Surveillance. Next to him is Dr. Johan Augustin, Chief Director for Fisheries Research Development. Next to me is Mr. Dennis Fredericks, our Chief Director for Marine Resource Management. Chairperson, thank you very much. We would like to tell you in confidence with the process of the long-term rights allocation process that is taking place. From the start, I want to say to you that this is a dynamic process. Each and every day changes are taking place around this process, but this is the broad framework of how we approach this process. The first slide is basically the outline of this presentation. We want to give you an introduction, the profile of the current eight sectors that is due for reallocation in December, and our rollout program. We have broken down in three phases. The phase one is to deal with the policy processes and the public consultation process that has taken place. Phase two is the MLRA review process and small-scale fisheries implementation plan. And phase three, we just want to deal with some of the long-term rights application and administrative processes. And then what we have termed independent structures that we are in the process to establish that will assist us. We call the one the fishing rights assessment panel, and the second one is the fishing rights verification team. That is the three phases that we've broken down the rights allocation process into. But just to take you a little bit back a few years ago, in 2005, 2006, it was the first process of long-term rights allocation, and that rights were granted to applicants in terms of Section 18 of the Marine Living Resources Act, 1998, Act number 18 of 1998. These fishing rights then were allocated in 22 fishing sectors for periods ranging from 2 to 15 years. Fishing rights in 6 of the 22 commercial fishing sectors have been granted for 8 years and it will expire in 2013. Fishing rights in white mussels and oyster sectors were only granted for 2 and 3 years and expired in 2007 and 2008 respectively. Fishing rights were also granted in the abalone sector in 2003 for a period of 10 years and these rights will expire next year in July. The fishing sectors with the rights expired is the following. The eight sectors that we are talking about, it's KwaZulu-Natal prawn straw, demersal shark, squid, commonly known as choker, tuna pole, hake end line, white mussels, oysters, and traditional lionfish. Now the profile of this profile is a snapshot of the existing 8 sectors since 2005 when they were allocated. These sectors are continuously changing because in the Marine Domain Resources Act, there is a section 21 which basically speaks to the transfer of rights, changing of rights, and then section 28 where the transgressions of rights are taking place. So in a continuous basis, the profile is changing over time. But just to give you a sense so quickly about this particular 8 sectors. In cases in front row in 2005, four applications were received for these rights. Now, this is a right which is, just for the committee's sake also, when we talk about fishing rights, the allocation of TACs, commonly known as quotas, or TAEs, which is an effort base, where you define the right that is allocated in the effort that fishery is allowed to fish in a particular sector. Now, in this sector, there were 8 vessels, which is the current TAE, and 7 of those vessels are operational, and the right is 67% black-owned. There's no females in that sector. Tunapol, we received about 200 applicants. There are 200 vessels. It's now we've put a cap on it to control the effort to 198, and the number of crew that work in that sector is 3,600 people, and that is what the rights which were granted in 2005 were 198 vessels, and the people that worked there or which were allocated then was 2,961. It is 47% black-owned and 26% female. Again, line, 186 applicants. The TAE, the quota that was allocated, was 5,193 tons. There are 742 crew members, and there were 95 rights holders that were allocated those rights. And that, in the headline, is 75% black-owned, 23% is female. Squid choker, commonly known, is 236 applicants in that 2005. It's a TAE-based fisheries. The vessels that is utilized there is 136 vessels, and there are 2,432 crew members, with 120 right holders, and 48.1% black-owned, 11% female. The Mercer SAR is 40 applicants. The TA is only 6 vessels is allowed in that sector. There are 6 right holders and 6 vessels, 63% black-owned, 50% female. Traditional line fish received 966 applicants. The vessels that's allowed there is 455 with 3,450 crew members. It's the same when the rights were granted. That sector is 58% white, 35% colored, 6% African, 1% Indian, 2% female. The white mussels, we received 80 applicants. The TAE was 7 rights. And that is 49 pickers, basically how the effort is utilized in that sector. 86% black, 14% white. Oysters, so 125 applicants. The TAE allowed for 145 pickers, and in KZN, it is allocated 190 oysters per day in KZN. There are 7 right holders, 49 pickers. In the oceans, 105 rights holders and 145 pickers, 75% black and 25% white. I just wanted to give you a brief snippet about this right that comes available in 31st of December next year. So phase one, in the process of allocating this new right, we utilize the Marine Living Resource Act, but there's also a general policy of right allocation. And the first step for us was to review, take in consideration
experience that we've built up, the lessons that have been learned, review this civil rights allocation policy. We ourselves decided that as a department, we have to do that review internally to see what are things that we should do, and we've done that on the 8th of April this year. A draft general policy was presented on the 15th of April for comment. The comment period was for 10 May, but it was subsequently extended to the 14th of June after we received many comments from different communities, different stakeholders around that extension, requesting an extension. The critical issues that we have identified in this policy, which we try to address, is the application of the policy, how the policy must be applied, the purpose and objectives of this policy, and also when the rights were allocated in 2005. We were part of the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, and we are part of the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries now. So also the mandate has changed, and we've also changed in government priorities and policies. So that is what we wanted to address in that process. And the policy talks to the allocation of the fishing rights, specifically around the provisional list, talking to the issue about multi-sector involvement and the design of the criteria that we're talking about. Just also to give you a snapshot around when we talk about small scale fisheries. So on the one hand, we just talked about the policy, but we also want to give you an understanding of what is existing around in the small scale fishing sector. Now, these numbers that are there on the screen now, it is people that don't have rights. They have an exemption on an annual basis. They receive exemption from the department in those provinces. So in KZN, for instance, there are 19 communities that benefit, and we're talking about 1,359 fishers, individual fishers, that get an exemption on an annual basis to feed lion fish, brown mussels, and oysters. In Eastern Cape, it's 82 communities, and it's 4,474 people, individuals. In the Western Cape, which is different also than the Eastern Cape, because these exemptions that were given in the Western Cape was also based on a quasi court order which was brought by Martin DC, and the court has ordered that 700 of their members are supposed to have been given exemptions in lionfish, which was roughly white mussel. But in negotiations with all of the stakeholders in the Western Cape, first, including Masifundisi, we then felt after our scientists had done some research and given us some advice around it, that we could increase that number from 700 to 1,500, and that we spread it in nearly every coastal community in the Western Cape. We then added 81 people in the Northern Cape for Port Nolloth and Wonder the Bay. And so in total, communities that receive exemptions is 137 communities, and we're talking about 7,333 individual people that get exemptions on an annual basis from the department. Now, just to compare that, in the department we have, in the 22 sectors, we have 2,600 commercial rights holders. Now, those are rights holders, and these are exemption holders. From your bigger companies to individual people that are part of that 2,600. In addition to this, we give through the post office for anyone in the country, including yourself, anyone can apply for a recreational fishing permit, and we have 36,000 permit holders currently. Now, in phase one, we talk about public consultation process around the general policy first. We have held public consultations from 11th to the 26th of April. In 14 centers across the country, from Richards Bay to Fort Mullis, we have spoken to people that have attended between 3,600 to 4,000 people, those meetings. We also had two specific meetings with the bigger industry and small scale fisheries associations to get the leadership and the industry also on board around the general policy. We then followed it up with a public consultation process on the 8th sector policy specifically. That was from the 8th to the 20th of May, and it was housed in 20 venues appropriate for the specific sectors around the coast. That was phase one, just to focus you around the policies that were done in this consultation. Now the second phase is around the MLRA process. We have an independent service provider from the University of Pretoria, led by Professor Nico Olivier, that assisted us in the drafting of the amendment to the current MLRA, which purpose primarily is to give a legal framework for us to allocate fisheries resources to small scale fishers. The key issues that came out from our legal review process is the issue about the form of the right holding. It's something that is still a issue of debate. As I said, we want to determine a legal framework for allocation of smallholder fisheries, because in the current MLRA there is no legal framework to do that. In that case, we talk about a review appeal board, delegation of powers of ministers to provinces or to other levels of the assignment of powers. We, after an extensive process also, which we had a number of public meetings and comments from the public, we have extended that comment period to the 14th of June. And our focus now is not to amend the Act completely, but just to focus on a amendment that will primarily provide a legal framework for the small scale fisheries policy that was adopted last year. The small scale fishery implementation plan, we hope to finalize this by the end of this month. There's a draft report on application and allocation management processes, with a draft list of the basket of species that would be available. We also have just recently have identified draft what we call the geographical zones, which we will as soon as the implementation plan is finalized, the draft is finalized, we will then also make that for public consultation open. Just to also alert the committee, we are planning to go on another roadshow with the minister itself, and it is just a question of the date that will be finalized very soon, to take both the policy, the draft amendments, and the small scale implementation plan for public comment again through a number of roadshows. Here we just have a revised roadmap and the application and administration processes. We do recall that we have given you a roadmap before, but through this consultation process, that is what consultation processes are meant to be, that we get influence and that we listen to the comments that are made, and based on those comments we adjust our approach to this. Just in a summarized format, we've reviewed the general sector policy, public consultations have taken place from the 10th of April the 11th of April to the 11th of May. We've extended the comment period for both, for all of our public documents, which is the general policy, the sector policies, and the amended, the proposed amendments to the MRA the 14th of June. We hope to gazette the final policy by the 28th of June. The appointment of the Fishing Rights Assessment Panel and the Fishing Rights Verification Team, I just have to make an adjustment to the date which is there. Okay, you've made the changes, yeah. The document that you have might not have the changes to the 1st of July. One of the things that came out in our public comment process was that communities, fishing communities, basically have asked us, begged us to simplify the application process, the forms, and the process. In the old system, or the 2005 allocation processes, these forms were between 28 and 35 pages. Obviously, it has been a very difficult and complicated process for all the fishers and communities to fill those forms. In some of the sectors, it was also required that these forms, these applications, were only allowed through electronic application process. We have now started the process to simplify the forms, the application forms for these 8 sectors, not more than 5 pages. We will translate them into the 4 coastal languages. But the application process will be in English, but we will have teams that will assist people across the coast translating, explaining these forms in the language that people speak. We are in a process using the existing application fees that were or the approvals that were given by Treasury in 2005. One of the things that also came out in the public consultation process is that we should reduce or make the application fees affordable for our communities and for potential small-scale fishers or SMMEs or ordinary people to apply. In the past, the application fee was between 5 to 8,000 rand, non-refundable. We are considering a fee quite far less than that. We are just in negotiations with Treasury around what that fee should be, and as soon as we have an agreement, we will then also publish that fee. But please note, with the implementation process of the small-scale fisheries process, we are considering not even to ask a fee for small-scale fishing applicants. But those are the things that it's not been finalized yet, but the intention of the department and the thinking of the department is in according to make the application fee for the broad sectors affordable, and that we consider not charging an application fee for small fishers. We, however, did or are considering what we call a grant right fee. So when you are successful in receiving a right, you will then be charged a much more appropriate grant of right fee. Those are the things that is still under consideration. But I think it was important that we do share the thinking with the portfolio committee. We hope that we are not going to be that you are not going to be too harsh, because that's still process of consultation and consultation with Treasury, but also broadly with the fishing community itself. We hope to call for applications for these rights by the 1st of July. Then the policies have been finalized. We could find an agreement around more or less what the final draft of the amendments would be, and that we have appointed the Fishing Rights Verification Team and Assessment Panel, which will assist us around receiving those applications. The applications will be for 3 months from the 1st of July till the 31st of September will be the close for the applications. We are building an internal team where communities, fishing communities, would not be required to employ lawyers or consultants, but that we will have an internal team that will assist, not filling in the forms, but advising communities across the coast around the forms, how to fill it in and so on. We still want to have the independence, the people themselves do fill in the forms, but not do it for them, but assist them around those things. This issue that we hope we've been informed about the issue about the amendment of the MRA, that the legislation, there's a cut-off period when legislation must be submitted. We've spoken to NEDLAG, we've spoken to all of the legal advisors of big and small companies in the small scale fishery associations, so that we can find a common ground around the focus on the amendment that is required, and that we have a focused approach around the amendments and don't do all of the amendments that that maybe have been proposed now, so that we can find a mechanism to get the amendments through cabinet, through submitted to Parliament and for its own processes. The verification, as you see, on the 30th of September, we hope to have all of the applications received, and then the verification team will kick in, and that verification process will also take place for 2 months. For 2 months, from the 1st of October to the 30th of November. Basically, what we want to do, also on our own experiences, to prevent this issue about fronting, people abusing our communities, taking their IDs, and so on. Part of the task, and I'll talk with now, of the verification team, what the key output should be, is primarily to prevent that we have the abuse in the system that was there before. Let me first start in phase three, is the fishing rights assessment panel. We have done the evaluation of the applications that we've received. It has to go to the department's adjudication committee, and then hopefully by the 30th of June, we would have appointed, the 28th of June, we would have appointed the fishing rights assessment panel and the fishing rights verification team. This key outputs of the fishing rights assessment panel is the following. The formation of an appropriately qualified multidisciplinary team, which have got legal, administrative, auditing, among others, for the provision of administrative support and assistance in the evaluation of applications to each of the 8 fishing sectors. The provision of administrative support for the evaluation of all applications and appeals, and the compilation of a provisional list of successful applicants. The report encapsulates the applications and appeals received from the fishing rights verification team in different categories, identified the allocation process purposes, liaison with the DBG and other duly authorized persons during the allocation and appeals process, the development and editing and finalizing of reports on request of the decision maker, which is the department, the preparation of notification letters advising applicants of outcomes of the application and/or appeal, and they are also going to be involved in the ongoing project and administrative management throughout the allocation process. The fishing rights verification team, which will kick in first, they will receive all the application and appeals, but specific protocols in place to ensure verification of security of information, so that we don't lose the information. Like we've experienced, people said they've submitted, but no one, some of the applications got lost. We will have a secure system around it. They will also sorting and safeguard of original applications, capturing of all pertinent information submitted by applicants into an electronic database. the implementation of database in order to generate reports necessary for the department to assist with the granting of fishing rights, regular updating of the database for each fishing sector. In fact, one of the things which is new, we want them to verify and even themselves go and take photographs of applicants, because our experience has told people take people's ID, they fraud sometimes the ID documents of communities and then apply on their behalf for this thing. So we want shareholders, members, trustees and beneficiaries of applicants to be photographed or those photographs to be verified so that we don't have complaints that people said Desmond has taken my application and he took my ID and he applied on my behalf. Everyone must be known that will be applying. Chairperson, I don't want to go maybe slide 14. This is just further key outputs of the verification team. Maybe if there's questions around it, we can talk to them. I want to maybe come to slide 15, which deals with the issue that we are still in the process of consulting, getting advice, waiting for comments. One is the issue about the duration of the fishing rights. Now in 2005, the reason why we agreed to have a long-term rights, provide people with long-term fishing rights up to 15 years, was that there was huge amount of investment that was required to have guaranteed those investments. But there's also talks about people commenting, asking us that we must look at the duration of the rights, either making it shorter or we have not, we're still looking for comment around those things. Also the form of rights holding, this is one of the areas that has been lots of debate, comments, is that when sometimes it's the confusion where people brought the small scale fishery policy, which has a clear identification around how the form of rights holding should be, in this issue about the individual rights, will there be individual rights in the person of Desmond Stevens, or will there, we're just talking about communal collective rights. So we more or less have decided that you will have a combination of all of those things. It's not going to be one form of right holding. In transformation, we spoke about the presentation. What are the specific targets that we are looking at? We have not sort of finalized. We know there are efforts of transformation currently in each of the fishing sectors, but what should be the specific targets that we are talking about? The issue of broadening participation, when we talk about new entrants, although the policy has certain statements around new entrants, how do we this call for that we must have younger people having access to fishing rights, women that must have access to fishing rights, how do we ensure that with the new entrants that we do provide their opportunities? The issue of economic viability of fishing rights, we have seen that with the proliferation of rights, many of our people are forced into agreements with bigger companies because on their own, the singular right that they have, they cannot, in fact, make a living out of it. So we're looking at creating a process where, with research, with still an issue about sustainable development, because we only have one resource. How can we make rights more economically viable? We've spoken about the MRA review and consolidation. The issue of a value chain, we are doing some work around that. How can we have greater beneficiation when people, because sometimes the ordinary fishers, they just want to go and catch the fish. They say they don't have blood in their veins, they only have salt water. But when they go and catch the fish, there's a process that adds value to that quota that they caught. And in most instances, they themselves don't benefit from that value chain. And we are saying how to create a system that the people that go to sea, that they do benefit from that value chain process. The kind of support programs that we are developing are part of the implementation plan. In 2 weeks' time, we will have what we call an intergovernmental forum just to talk about the support programs with DTI, with Department of Economic Development, the Department of Local Government to ensure how fishing harbors, how the service that is required. So we will have comprehensive and our own department in agriculture, in other sectors, part of our department. How do we create a comprehensive support program that will ensure that fishers do not fail when they get these fishing rights? One of the undertakings that we have done is that we, in this 8 sectors, we have undertaken that we have made with the big companies, with the small scale fishers, people that are currently, with their current rights, and they want to transfer or change those rights, we have set a target to complete all of the Section 21 transfers by the end of this month, and we are very far advanced around this thing. How do we incorporate the small scale fishing sector policy into the right allocation process? As I said, we will finalize the implementation plan. That implementation plan will be discussed at NATLEG. We have a number of reference groups that will consult around the implementation plan. Research is also looking at what resource management, certain of those fishery sectors which were left before, how can we revitalize or even create new fisheries so that we can create greater opportunities for this. We admit there's some limited research done on current and new fisheries due to funding, but we're also developing creative ways with the industry to ensure that we do some of this research jointly. We've also started the process to do specific socio-economic research. Currently we are very good with the ecological research. Our systems are very good around those things. But we also want to understand the socio-economic profiles of each of these fishing communities that we're talking about. And we are just finalizing with some experts the terms of reference for such a socio-economic research that should be done. Eco-culture is one of those areas that we also see as an alternative livelihood where with the pressure that is on the wild capture fish stocks, that you create opportunities for people outside of the sea, inland, or on land for them to also farm with fish, where you don't only, you try to persuade our communities to also go for fish farming. So those are the cross-cutting methods. We are not saying that we have answers for. These are the things that we don't have final blueprint answers for. It's things that we are continuously engaging with industry, with communities, with yourselves, and I think our collective wisdom will come with answers that we can do. Chairperson, thank you very much for your patience to listen to me. It is a mouthful, as I said. This is a work in progress. It's a dynamic process. This fishing rights allocation process. We will only be able to say in the 31st of December that we are finalized with the process. But now it is changing, and we welcome questions. We will try as far as possible to answer questions as a collective. If we are not able to answer them now, we commit ourselves to come back with the appropriate answers. Thank you very much.
We shall be the ones telling you that. Thanks for that, members. That is the briefing, as mentioned. The intention is get the briefing. How ready is the department in the direction of allocation of fishing rights by end of 2013? That's a simple preferred method of the department. We welcome the fisher people. I was, beginning to think as to, where they be coming from. It always asks us so that we get a sense as to whom we are dealing with. So that outside of our work here, even in our work, during our work, we are able to directly, you know, communicate specific messages. Yet you are here, you have taken an interest, you know, we are dealing with a subject matter that is dear to your heart. Desmond was talking about a situation where some of us, we no longer have blood in our veins, but salted water. Because we really deal with these issues on a daily basis. In fact, this is what you know best in life. You know nothing else in terms of living, and also in terms of jobs, and also in terms of business, except sea water resources. We have a net, some of you, and some of you have a net. But what we are here for, we are here to be briefed by the department. In other words, it is a session between the department and the committee. However, in our interaction with us, we obviously have specific messages. Maybe what we just need to indicate or rather get from you, Fisher folks, to just an indication which area you come from. Because I would imagine here, I know Babumba and they from Kairuta, Lamba. So just an indication so that we all get to know us who is here. You are a group mama. Speak to the mic, if you want.
Ignomathemba Sotomela, he could come and well officials. This is why I help them. Because my temba Sotomela was a hoop of the Santi Fan Pay, well officials. And I'll die.
Okay. Mama, your group?
Okay. We are a group from Chespain, within the Siemens Forum of Chespain, it's this part of the forum. So I'm the chair from Chespain, representing the Chespain people.
Thank you. Which other group do you have here? Mama? Switch off.
I'm Shayon, first indigenous woman of South Bay, community leader.
Okay. Which other group is here that we are in here? Yes, sir.
I'm Ivan Moss. I'm from Plymouth Housing, Hermanus.
Hermanus.
Yeah.
Okay. Which other group is here? No?
Hi, good morning. I'm Peter John, Secretary of Coastal in South Bay.
Okay, so we have here House Bay, Mitchell's Plain, Arnana, and Langa only. Am I correct? Mitchell's Plain?
I think, Mr. Chair, I think Philippi and Philippi and Hulito was informed to be by this meeting. Could they install Philippi and Hulito?
What?
Langa appears at Lancer Fishing Forum.
Atlantis as well. Mama, once again, this is a briefing session by the Department of Agriculture for Censure, briefing the committee. So your being here, it is only to be here as guest, only to listen and to observe, not to participate. We did have a certain point, not once, where you were participating. But this session is not for you to participate. But we welcome you, nevertheless. And thank you for having made it here. Is that fine? Is that understood? Okay. Thank you. Members, that is the briefing we have from the
Okay. No. No. No.
Sorry? No. Speak to the mic so that we can hear properly. Bring the mic closer to you.
Who are you going to take about the allocation of the fishing industry? Especially in Muna, Kelvin Ravala, but can really keep down those.
Melinda?
Keep down those. You have to keep down.
No, that's fine.
Because
Not now. You can switch off.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Members, that is a briefing from the department. Mama Palisa? Mrs. I almost said Mrs. Fontana. Mr. Fontana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. Molweni, Kuyamora. Chairperson, I need to acknowledge the progress in the process of the crop cutting policy consideration. That was the policies that was a bone of contention along the 3,000 kilometer coastline of South Africa. The comments I want to make here is I want to come to fourth bullet point from the last bullet point about closure of collapsed fisheries. One needs to bring under the attention of the department the question of the seals that also can give us a job creation and an alternative why we are faced with the collapse of some species along coastline or the migration of some species. The department needs to come up really with a plan. I think they are not acknowledging themselves by saying that they don't have a blueprint, but if you look at the cost-cutting policy consideration, there is a blueprint that they have created for themselves with the inputs of the different coastal communities. We know that the seals were condemned by the green scorpion, or Greenpeace, what their name was previous and now green scorpion. But reality is, seals is a job creation mechanism. And it can put food on the table in some areas of your coast, especially where you have the seals. I don't want to give the seals this name, but they are the biggest poacher of some of the species along the coast. They eat the fish. And nobody is arresting the seal. So to arrest the seals is by job creation, which will help us opening factory processing this. We must just find a mechanism how to kill it. I think that was the bone of contention those years when we closed the Bonolo factory. It was about the killing of how the killing of the seals. That is the first comment. The second one, is we welcome the support program that is going to be there, because the support program will help us cut out the middleman that is messing up, and middleman that is fraudulent, misusing and exploiting our people. That will help us addressing that, because that was also a contention of there is no support program and people are vulnerable because people have this need for food on the table, and then people come and exploit and take their rights, and then we end up with paper quota instead of transformation being growing, then transformation is reversed by paper quota. It is addressing that. So for that, we really need to compliment the department for having the thinking to that direction of a support program for our historically disadvantaged coastal communities. And Chairperson, I can't wait for the bill to come to us for review, because the review of that bill will help us a lot to implement our socio-economic deliverables to our coastal communities along the coastline. It needs to be really, it needs to move with a speed of a jet, Mr. Stevens, with a speed of a jet. It needs to meet, to move with that, because it is 50 years overdue. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Fantola?
Yes, thank you, Chair. But, you know, we have so many DCGs that we lose track of it, and we'll probably, I don't know how long this one will take. But, you know, we have a department that is giving us such outdated statistics from 2005. I'm sure the department has new updated statistics. Why don't we get that? I mean, we should make our decisions on the latest statistics that are available. And like Mr. Stevens has said, that, you know, it's quite fluid. It might look totally different now. So if we need to make decisions in this portfolio committee, we would like the updated statistics. We can't make decisions on something that is 7 or 8 years old. And in fact, regulation is at the moment governing, if you want to say.
So that there is progress, Mr. Van Dalen, specific reference to?
I'm referring to the first page where they gave us the rate, the breakdown of the rights that were allocated, which are from 2005. In 2006,
was it the first one?
Profile of current quota system. I mean, a lot of people have applied to and have sold their things and have sold it to other people, so it's changed. Like Mr. Stevens has said, why do we have such an outdated, that it's a snapshot from 2005-2006? Do you understand that, Professor? That is the question. And then, you know, too much regulation is governing our fisheries, and we need to relook at the whole Marine Living Resource Act. I mean, like the 24-hour fishing room, that is a regulation, it's not in the act, it's something that somebody in office dreamt up that it would be a good idea and made it regulation. You know, it gives too much power to somebody sitting in office and making these silly little regulations. And we need to relook at the whole Marine Living Resource Act to be able to fix that. What we have seen now, I've gone to one of the sessions, it's quite a big portion of the new act that is taking place now. I mean, everything needs to be changed. It looks like the amendments are bigger than the act itself. And I think that it won't pass through Parliament very soon if they're going to make so much change. We need to simplify it. If we need, want the small-scale fishing policy to be included in the new act, we can do an amendment to do just that. We don't need to change the whole act right now to accomplish that. It's quite a speed needs to be done, because some of these rights need to be elevated by the end of the year. But you can't write the rest of the act just because of that. So it needs to be simplified in some manner. You can't bring an amendment bill to change the whole act. I mean, you need to change the act to do that. I hope I made that point clear. And then, you know, In the minister's speech in Parliament, she promised that fishing rights would be ring-fenced for use structures. I was a bit shocked to hear that. I said, why do we stop at ring-fencing for use structures only? Why don't we ring-fence some rights for women, groups, and people with disabilities? And while you're at it, why don't we license the domestic workers as well? Give them some fishing rights. The problem is that, you know, if you have a law, you can't ring-fence anything in a law for certain people. It just doesn't work in the law. And then you have made so many expectations with this fishing rights allocation. Everybody in the country, I can say every Tom, Dick, Harry is now a fisherman. I mean, there will be so many applications for this bit of right that the people will be fighting for that. And I can understand that, because these expectations have been raised everywhere. But the fishing stuff is only that big. It needs to come from somewhere. And if other people are going to fight for the same pool of resources, you're going to have a big fight. So I think that you know, when the last rights were allocated 7 years back, 8 years back, it gave you an opportunity to actually do all this work, go to the communities, find out what it is they want, how we're going to change it. And you are actually now the victim of your own incompetence. I mean, you have 5 years to do it. Now, in the end, we only have a couple of months, and it needs to be rushed through Parliament. It's just because you were not doing your work. And now you are putting Parliament under pressure and everything else, and I think it's very unfair that you have only woken up now, and now you want to put together a slapdash process, everything. We can change the Marine Living Resource Act because it's going to Parliament, and we want to change every little bit that has bothered anybody else before. And you are losing these, are going to have all these unintended consequences, which are just not right. I mean, in the end, the real fishing people on the coast, that are fishermen, they are going to lose out of the process. Because, I mean, it just makes sense if a lot of people are going to fight for the small pool of products that the people that have been living there, they might not be these big lawyers and people that know everything and fill in these forms. Those are the people that maybe haven't gone to school too much either. So, you know, when you go fishing, you don't need to have a matric. So these people are going to be the losers because other people are going to take advantage of it. They're not going to understand the process, and we need to go out with them and explain it to them perfectly how it's going to work, and then we might go forward. But this slapdash process, do you think that the people are going to take it lying down? They are not. I'm telling you that. The people are going to be upset, and the people are going to be overlooked again if you keep going ahead with this process that you are on now. Thank you very much.
Once again, you are not supposed to participate. You are here to be a spectator, to listen, and to observe. You can imagine the embarrassment you're going to do when you're going to clap for the other and not clap for the other. In fact, those are going to feel bad in themselves, because you're going to say to yourself, why am I not clapping for the other one? The other, you know, listening to me, Van Dalen, more and more, I'm saying to myself, in his heart, I'm convinced today. When I hear him talking about the vulnerable sectors within our society, those living with disabilities, the youth, you name them, there is a communist in his heart. Somewhere. You'll prove me wrong one day. Mr. Steyn?
Mr. Chairperson, just because you put the deer in your own box, that you don't want us to say these kinds of things. We've been saying it for years, you just listen, that's the problem. Chair, my question is on slide 4, I'll start there, and it basically it deals with what my colleague was saying, because fishing is new to me. I understand bait and meat and things like that, but I'm very concerned listening here today to this presentation. And coming this long process, and now suddenly everything needs to be put in some kind of a fast-track mode. Okay, I want to find out firstly, the third bullet point on slide 4, it says fishing rights in 6 of the 22 commercial fishing sectors have been granted for 8 stocks. What happens to the others? I'm now thinking forward. I don't want in 3 years' time going through a rush process again for the rest of the fishing rights. So please tell us about the rest. We now know about what's going on with this one, but is there anything on that? Is this not part of this process at all? Do we not suppose, are we not supposed to know about what's going on? Are we going to deal with it next year also in this kind of fashion, or what's happening? And then the next bullet point on the fishing rights of the white mussels and the oyster sectors that actually expired in 2007 and 2008. What have you been doing in the meantime? What was the process to keep this going since 2007 and 2008, and why is nothing done? What happened since then? So if anyone could assist me with that. And in Jesus, I'm also having this concern. Are we, this department, going to be able to go through all this process and be ready by 8 December? I was listening to this thing of taking pictures and doing this and doing that. I come from Landreform Portfolio Chair, just as a background maker for the department. The Landreform process and this process to me sounds like the same kind of thing. We still in Landreform doesn't know how many claims was lodged in 1998. Because the department couldn't cope with the process.
So what do you have in place? Do you have extra people? Are you going to work overtime, overnight, during night times? How are you going to cope with it? I can just see, Chairperson, a crisis that's going to happen. But in any case, please tell me, how are you going to cope with it? Then, Chairperson, the other issue that I'm really worried about is that, realistically, how many extra quotas can we leave? Do you have, maybe I missed it somewhere, but do you already have an allocation? You know, the allocation for this species is going to be so much, for this species is going to be so much. Is that out there? Did you get it? Give it because we didn't get it now, because I don't know. I would like to see it as part of this presentation so that we know in each area there's the allocation, you know at least that section. And then, Chairperson, just lastly, I know it's not part of the discussion today, but the whole thing of poaching, and how ready are you to deal with the people that does not get allocations? Because I cannot see, how do you patrol and make sure that if people live next to a sea and it's their only source of income, they did not get them a right or allocation. How do you deal with that? I don't know. The whole thing of fishing rights for me is very difficult. If people live there and it's the only source of income, and it's the thing that they live on, how do we deal with that? Is there a process in place at the moment? And maybe the acting DDG spoke about beneficiation process. I think maybe you must think about in that line, so that if a person did not get a fishing allocation or fishing right, at least that those people can also be part of that beneficiation process, so that something be given to them, because otherwise we are going to make all fishermen poachers, because they don't have any other source of income. Thank you, Chair.
Mr.
Abram, and then Mr. Tayyip Khan. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I must admit my ignorance about this sector. They say seafood is good for the brain, that's why they must use fish oil to lubricate the computers, so that they work well. Chairperson, I want to welcome the statement by Mr. Stevens that the intention is not to amend the total act, but to provide for small-scale fishers. Well, if that's an interim measure, it's a good thing. So that at least small-scale people can be helped. Chairperson, I've got a couple of problems here that I would like to put on the table. Firstly, we are told that approximately 3,600 to 4,000 people attended the consultation process. If Mr. Stevens could tell us what was the feedback from that consultation process. It is one thing to consult with people. It is quite another to be able to say what the people felt. It will be important to hear that. The other issue, Chairperson, is that there are all these figures on page 8 of the presentation, or slide 8 of the presentation. Now you are referring to the number of communities in one column, and then you refer to the number of fishers. Now these numbers of fishers, these figures, is at what date are these figures applicable? Because I think that there must be fluctuations. You could give us an indication. Then, Chairperson, it is said here that application fees will be dispensed with. I just want to warn the department. You have created an expectation that application fees will be dispensed with. Heaven helps you if that is not done. So be very sure that what you are saying is what you will be implementing. You must not have a lot of ideas. The other issue, Chairperson, is that when you say that an applicant shall not be permitted
to get a consultant or a lawyer to fill in their forms. I think, Chairperson, every individual has a basic right. That right is that if I feel that I can fill the form in myself, I shall do it myself. If I feel that I would like to get the assistance of a lawyer, I think I should have the right to do so. Because you must remember, Jack, that unfortunately we've got a history. History is that how dependable have our officials been in the past? And secondly, Jack, there's a question of confidentiality. I mean, if I come to a particular official and that official helps me to fill in my form, and I have a problem that that person can give my information to someone else. So you have to look at that very carefully, whether constitutionally it is the right approach. I think it is the right of the individual to decide that fine, here is an official, this official will assist me. If that person wants to make use of that official, it is that official's right. I don't think that we can take away the right of an individual to decide how he wants to do his things. The other question here is, will this not open the way to corruption? If it's only officials that must help people to fill in forms, will it lead to any form of corruption? Chairperson, in this whole process, one must see that one achieves the objective, and that is to empower small scale fishers. But at the same time, that you do not do it in such a way that you see large-scale losses of jobs. There's a thin line, there's a balance that you have to follow. Chairperson, very important. You have, for example, for new farmers, certain programs, like CASP, like MAFISA, all that sort of stuff. What sort of programs has the department thought of to assist people with? I mean, what happens if a couple of women get together and form a little co-op or whatever? And to what devices are they then left? Is there some other scheme where government or the department would help them with funding to buy a boat in order to go and fish or whatever? We are talking here, Mr. Stevens spoke about value addition. If you want to add value, then you've got to have a facility. This is a product which if you don't work with it immediately, it rots. So what about that kind of facility that should be created in order to beneficiate people to the optimum? We haven't heard much about that. Finally, Chair, I must say that slide 14 worries me. Sorry, the department must know one thing, and that is that I unfortunately look at consequences, unintended ones. Unfortunately, I made that way. I always see the dark side of something as well. Het kan niet altijd enkie door wees hier, zie zondag elke dag, soms ken je. Now you take, for example, the fishing rights verification team. Depends what the qualifications are going to be of the people that will serve on such a team. Very important. Have they the wherewithal, the knowledge of the particular sector? And then when you say, yes, analysis of information submitted by the applicant in application form or as received from the department or anonymous tip-off line, my question is, how are you going to police that? You have Mr. Paulson who decides to apply, and I don't like the guy, and I phone up and I say, hey, listen, this bloody guy is a crook or this or that or the other, or he's a front for somebody. How are you going to check out? Because then you may, on the basis of a single phone call, destroy the future of an individual who may otherwise have been a genuine person.
So this whole question that I see here, Chairperson, collation and summarization of all tip-offs received via the hotline and other sources. The whole process is very cumbersome. Ons moet die lewe makliker maak vir mense. Not make it more difficult. So this thing bothers me, Chairperson, that, alright, if you want to verify the ownership of a vessel and this sort of stuff, then that may be easy. But there are certain hidden things in this whole process, which I submit respectfully to, will be very, very difficult to implement. So in short, what we need is something that is more streamlined, something that is far more easier, something that is easily implementable, yet you want to achieve the results that you want to achieve. Our primary purpose in this world, Chairperson, as the Dalai Lama said, is to make life easy for others and to do good to others, not to hurt them. And I'm afraid, Chair, that some of the provisions that I see here that are planned are going to hurt people instead of helping people. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation from the department. I just want to check from Mr. Stevens, the 3,000 standards that was talking about that attended consultation, were they there in one day or in different days, or in these two venues of 14 centers, were the only 3,000 standards that attended those public consultations? And how are you advertising the attendance to those consultations? Were you using the media, papers, radios, or whatever, or not hailing as well? And the other one is on slide 12, the minimum requirements. What are those minimum requirements that can just tell us? Thanks.
Thank you. The minister announced a special regime for youth. If you can also perhaps just expand on that one. But whether or not we are talking about other sectors that are vulnerable in society, or just specifically on youth, well, the other area that is of interest to me is the language. I hear you talk about, you know, English, Afrikaans, Zulu, and whether you are not expecting any other languages to be used by other people elsewhere in the country, or are you only going to be focusing on the coastal line communities? Or coastal communities, without having to go to other parts of the country, inland, so to speak, where there are dams and where there is lots and lots of fishing activity that is in place. The support program is a matter of serious concern. You really want to be able to say at the end, what we mean about cooperatives is as follows. It is simplified. Well, right here, when we were going through this whole land reform sort of program since 1994, communities must organize themselves in groups of 40, 50, 100, and so on and so forth. The experiences out there were that some of these programs, they didn't do well. To an extent, they owe it very much to the cumbersome nature of those groups. To an extent, it might be to clarify very simply as you go forward in your work about the cooperatives. I will never forget having been in Upington
visit, have seen some families out there in some vineyards. One of those cooperatives that I visited, you know, had a mother, a father, and a daughter. I love that cooperative. It is, by and large, a women majority held cooperative. The daughter had to go somewhere here in Cape Town for further studies in viticulture. To an extent, you know, you have a cooperative by nature. It's a just net cooperative that goes places. That you have 50, 100 is an example of your Hamburg. 133 members of that cooperative on an average. At best, what they do get is an allocation of 1.5 ton, which is an insult of the hosting to that community. To take it further, each of those dissected, that 133, only get a 300 rand per annum per year. 300 rand. Not 300,000, 300 rand. The money that you guys go and spend when you visit that cooperative, you know, it's far, far more than that what each of those people get per annum. So clearly that is not a viable, you know, economically speaking, cooperative. Of course, you are mentioning that you're not going to combine those communities with one of those fishes. You have a multiple, you know, species, three or four, so that in a year they are able to survive. I think that's the kind of thing that we really need to clarify as we move forward, so that we are not left hanging and confused at the end of the day. The reason why also, you know, our communities are here who are into fishing, I think it also assists you to get a sense of the issues that are being raised here to the department and by the department and by ourselves as your representatives. These are your representatives. They speak. They are called public representatives. Representatives of public. That's what we are called. In other words, we are supposed to get mandate from yourself to come and speak here and to be able to say what the department wants to do is not correct. This is the correct way to go. We'll get that mandate from yourself. We get to be able to say at the end of the day, yes, we are speaking on your behalf. And you shall tell us if you are not, so that we are online with what they want to do and what has to be done by the department. I think those are issues Desmond, you might wish to respond to, and then we'll take the second round. Thanks for that. There is tea outside so that it does not get cold. For some of us, quietly, you know, we go out and then come back with your tea. You can bring it here. But quietly, oh, sorry. Inkos. Sorry, I didn't see your hand. Sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson. Although I raised my hand very late after members have raised their questions, so I was thinking maybe some of them will take that one. Chairperson, with regards to the foreign questions that are found efficient now, I wanted to establish whether maybe the department does have maybe that power of saying maybe giving them certain allocations to them for fishing in our waters, because Chairman, currently one has been sort of getting from the media that there are some foreign vessels that are found to be fishing in our waters. That's the only thing that I want to just raise, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for that. Well, once again, on the field story, Desmond, it is a serious issue. I'm told a day each of those two, they chow something like 20 kilograms. Big poachers, more than what we have, in other words, more than the poachers that we have. The real, real poacher, is that still? Okay, thank you.
Jefferson, thank you very much. Honorable members, thank you for the question. You know, maybe I must just start by saying I come from a place called Kakamas. We only speak English in extreme emergencies. And maybe my English was not clear in some of these issues, but let me clarify some of these issues. Let me start with the last, in course in Kedukulu. There are no foreign vessels who are allowed to fish in our waters. There are in the tuna hole joint vessels, tuna long line, joint ventures between South Africans and foreigners, but those vessels are flagged South Africans, even if it's a problem. So there's no foreign vessels. All of the statistics in this document are current statistics, except that slide the Honorable Van Dalen has raised. And put there what was the right that was applied for and what is the current right now. Those are current. And in the other slide also, when we talk about the numbers which the Honorable Member Abraham has raised, those are current figures. So I just wanted to clarify that one. The second thing I just want to clarify, Honorable Chairperson, I must not be misunderstood. We are saying around the application fee. In the application process, we want to have an affordable application fee, which we are negotiating with Treasury, and I can even mention that figure, it's 240 rand. But with the small scale fishers, we are negotiating, consulting to make that. We're not making a promise here, because it's not our decision. It is in consultation with Treasury to make that application for small services a no-fee. But let me go to the specific issues that was raised. Honorable Member Kalisho, you see, unfortunately, I'm not sure, Chairperson also raised this matter of the seals. Now, seals are not included in the Marine Living Resources Act. It is in a act called Seal and Seabirds Act, which are the responsibility of the Department of Environmental Affairs. Now, in that act, unfortunately, it says it is illegal in our country to harvest seals under that act. We have our own debates about the issue about seal which you have raised, but I don't want to express our views on that matter, because it's legislation, and we are also signatories as a country to many of these international agreements, and it's governed by that legislation, the Seals and Seabirds Act, which is managed by our sister department here. I think Honorable Member Plesu, and the Chairperson have raised this issue about the support program. Now, this support program, we are in a process to exactly what it will cost to implement the small-scale fishery policy. What is the support we are talking about? Both support around vessels, equipment, training that is required, and that support program is a program that will be required intergovernmental support to implement it. And that's why we, in 2 weeks' time, will have this intergovernmental forum where this draft report will be presented there. Internally, in our department, we have a number of possibility that we are looking into. Unfortunately, Honorable Abraham is not here. The existing, because we are a separate department from Department of Agriculture, the existing support programs, CASP, in Lima, Letima, the Agri-BE fund that is in the department, we are looking how that existing support programs can assist in the implementation of the small-scale fishery. I've also mentioned that we are in a process of finalizing or adding to the existing memorandum of agreement between our department and the Department of the Trade and Industry. We have an agreement with them around aquaculture. We want to add in that agreement the element of boats, the support for providing vessels, support around they've got a very extensive program around training and establishing cooperatives, and the support around the incentive program that is in GDI. So we want to use the existing agreement that we have with them to add all of those things for them to provide us the support. So the issue of the support, and then of course we are continuously lobbying in our department to ring-fence certain resources for the implementation of the small-scale fishery policy. I must add and correct a statement to say we are not in a rush to implement this process. This process is in the making for 7 years, that ordinary fishes have been excluded from legally being provided with the fishing rights. So it's not something that we woke up yesterday. For 7 years, and many of those fishes are here in this room, have been asking, begging, marching, working with us to get small-scale fishes a legal basis to be allocated the rights and not the exemptions that we have currently. So I think it's, although it seems that we are rushing, we are very keen to adhere in that good faith that we have negotiated that small-scale fishing policy with stakeholders across this country to make that policy become a legal instrument to be allocating rights by this year. We will, I think some honorable members, both Paliso, Honorable Member Van Dalen, and Honorable Member Stein raised this issue about the amendment of the MLRA. We will now, and it's something that we have agreed internally, even before there was this glimmer of criticism, that we must now singularly just focus on the small-scale fishing policy. To have a minimalist agenda, we will not alter all of those sections that are there. We will just focus on this. In fact, we are agreeing there are behind-the-scenes processes that we are involved in with scientists, with NGOs, with the industry, with the small-scale fisher associations, so that all of us agree. In fact, we already had conversations with NetLeg, where they themselves in writing said to us, all of the parties at NetLeg, if you focus on only that minimalist agenda, that they will support the amendments. So we don't want people to be alarmed. Our focus is just to provide for those fishes in this amendment that legal framework so that we can allocate those rights to them. Of course, many of you, honorable members, you have also in your comments are giving us advice, and we take that advice in spirit that you provided to us. Many of you raised this issue that the issue about expectations, the unintended consequences that might be there, and we give the undertaking that we take this advice to heart, but we also want to affirm the aspirations of small scale fishers with you, because their patience must be rewarded, that this year by December there is a dispensation for the small scale fishers. This issue, Honorable Member Pandalan, which you raised, I think is an issue that we are debating also internally around this. We have been engaged with the trade unions around this issue about the working conditions of our staff so that we can, the nature of the work is required that we must be 24-hour based work that we do. There is certain sections of our branch, especially the compliance section, that are working already on that basis. Some of our conditions are restrictive, you are right. We are looking at creating that environment. Of course, when you are saying now that we must have fishing open for 24 hours, because we understand that fish are migrating in different areas, they don't have specific times that you can catch them. Then of course, with the limited resources that we have, we must also look into consideration around the issues of the sustainability of the resource and the issue about poaching that can become even a greater problem. But your sentiment that you expressed is in the spirit that we agree with, that we must be able to provide greater opportunity for people to fish. Honorable members, I hope I'm going to be able to address all of this. Honorable Member Stein, the issue that you've raised around what happens with that period of the poisonous in the mussels. What we have decided also, in that period, people were given exemptions. So they will not be able to fish, so were given exemptions. But what you raised is a very important, maybe something that I have not in detail just shared with you, is that we have now structures in the department which we call a fresh steering committee, a fishing rights steering committee. There's a admin committee, and there's a communications committee, and there's an operational center, which we are establishing now. Exactly what you are saying, what happens in future, so that we now, the foundation we put in place around this allocation of this state rights, that foundation will be able to sustain the process in next year in July with the Everlong. In 2015, it's the West Coast Rock Lobster, and then further on, it's the other sectors that will come. So that we don't have a stop-start process, but this will be part of a process that will be ongoing in the future. The issue about how many allocations we can give now, there is certain periods, and we've asked our research team, Dr. Augustine maybe can speak to that, but we've asked them for each of the sectors to say exactly what you asked. By middle of July, we want to know in cages in prawn throw, how many will be available to be allocated. But those things are part of cycles of research that's taking place. So you can't just some suckers, it must be determined through an authentic and credible process. So we are on that track because all of those sectors, as they are today, as we sit here in this room, they are, we know exactly what was allocated for them. But what we are saying is that we want to update those for this season. So by the middle of July, research would have been able to give us an exact the allocation for TACs and TAEs. Also, in our next visit to the portfolio committee next week, we will have a state of the resources presentation and report exactly for each of the fishing sectors in this country. What are the status of that resource, and what is the methodology for us to do research for each of those for those sectors? Honorable Stein, you also raised a very, very, very sore point around the issue about poaching. Now, poaching cannot only be committed by us alone as a branch fisheries. We have a very critical role to play in leading that process. We have an integrated fishery security strategy, which we work with other law enforcement agencies. But that is one element of dealing with poaching. Poaching is also an issue about education. It's also an issue about providing people access
and not to criminalize where people are, issues about coastal poverty. It is not only the Department of Agriculture. We must have a joint approach to deal with the extreme poverty that exists in coastal communities. And that's why we work with organizations or departments of social development. We work with all of them so that with the municipalities to assist around dealing with the issue about coastal poverty. But we must drive the process of this illegal fishing that is, in some instances, it's not only ordinary people that poach, but it's criminal syndicates who are part of a criminal economy that drive this process. And sometimes we are fast to criminalize ordinary people because they might, if I use this saying, poach for the pot. But our agenda is to deal with those criminal syndicates that become the main destroyers of our marine resources. Mr. Abram, Honourable Member Abram, thank you very much. Emphasize the issue that the issue which you have also raised in your initial statement, that the focus on the amendment of the MRA bill is just going to be on the small scale fisheries. We're going to have a minimalist agenda. We're going to try to offload all of those complicated things that create controversy and just focus on how we can, in a consensus-driven way, find manifestation of a legal framework for small scale fisheries in the amendments of the MRA. Those 3,000 to 4,000 people that were part of the consultation process, there were 116 comments on the gender policy. In fact, comments will still come in now as the extended period was, or for all of it, was extended to the 14th of June. We have a specific email address where we receive the comments. We have dedicated two staff members that just dealing with the comments, consolidating those comments. Even we have frequent asked questions which come from the comments which we put on our website, and that's on a daily basis we are trying to consolidate those comments that are coming in. In all of those meetings that we've attended also, we have taken extensive, we've recorded those meetings, extensive minutes, so even those meetings where people spoke in the mother tongue, we've recorded those comments as part of the consultation process. Honourable Abram, in your absence, I also just wanted to clarify this issue about the application fee. We are not making a promise yet. We want to emphasize that we are saying we have consulted with Treasury. We want to use existing approved fees for the application process, which has come to around 200 rand, 240 rand, which makes it affordable, but we are in negotiations around finding a mechanism where we will get approval to not charge us any fees for the small-scale fishers which are defined in the small-scale fishing policy. The issue about the consultants and the lawyers, you are right, and I think maybe if I didn't express me properly, the idea is not that we want to prevent anyone to consult with anyone. What we emphasize, there would be no need, because you know we are in a hard place, we are getting criticized if we don't provide the support to fishing communities, which we are now intending to do, creating capacity, and I'll talk to the capacity now. Or if we just leave people to go in, consultants would charge them, like now, currently. A consultant charges an ordinary fisher person to fill in a permit. An ordinary permit that my staff should do, they are now required to pay 900 rand to apply for a renewal of their permit. And we think that's not right. So we should do those things. And that's what we are busy doing. That there's no need for people to go to consultants or to lawyers, but it's still their right, their constitutional right to do that if they choose to be. You are right, we are taking your advice. This process is, the intention is to make it easier, less complicated for ordinary people, and these two structures that we are talking about, because we also don't want to be seen as a department, as departmental officials, to be the ones that determine who must get the fishing right and not. And there is no checks and balance into that process. Because tomorrow I will be blamed that I have given to this one fishing rights, or Dr. Augustine were involved in giving to his friend fishing rights. So we also say, once we have these two independent, and the requirements are, they must be legal auditing, forensic auditing entities that can verify and will sign confidentiality agreement with us, to be able to advise us on the verification. And the issue about the tip of line is but one verification process. So that will not be a sole determinant to disqualify someone. So this multidisciplinary team that will do the verification, it's a multiple things that we will do. They will check records at SARS, they will do background checks, they will see in our database if you have applied before, if you have Section 21 or Section 28 before. So there will be a multiple issue around those things. And the main purpose is to eliminate corruption, both from officials, but also from the companies or applicants that will apply. Our main objective is to eliminate corruption around having these independent structures around this, but also to have a fair process where people can see that they have been fairly treated, the applications have been handled in a professional way. That's why we are saying we don't want our officials to fill in the forms. They must be there as advice and assistance for people who need translation and a guidance and so on. But the person who applies must go fill in his or her form already. In one of these, a number of these comments that came to us were people were asking us, what do we do when people can't read and write? In that sense, we need to find someone to, the applicant to nominate someone to be able to fill in that form for them. Honorable Taylor, the consultations was not over one day. All of those numbers was part of that number of meetings, the 14 centers in the 20 centers that we visited around the sacred policy specifically. The attendees were advertised through a combination of different approaches, through the media, through direct invitations for current rights holders. We have what we call fishery development workers that are based across the coast, and they went to all communities to put up posters in each and every coastal community where people were invited. So there was a combination of invitations to people for those meetings. The minimum requirement that you ask, Honorable Kenneth, what we are saying is the process that we want to identify that people are genuine fisher people. They've been living in the coast and they've made a livelihood out of fishing. Myself, who are coming from Karamas, I can never be regarded as a fisherman. I don't know fish, I only eat meat. So we eat in Karamas breakfast, lunch, and supper, meat. So if you bring your seafood to me, I would get a problem. So I can never be able to, not me, not my family, we cannot be fishermen. We don't know the sea. So the idea is one of the main requirements, you must be able to lift. You lift at the coast, and that you have created a livelihood through the sea. Of course, through displacement of the old system, the group areas, fisher communities were displaced in the townships, away from where they lived before. So all of those things are defined in the small scale fishing policy to determine what is that fishing community that we talk about. And that is what I don't want to go into now. Secondly, people that will apply have to apply with all of the legislative frameworks of our country. around the issue about tax clearance certificate and so on. What in whatever format you apply as an individual or as a cooperative or as a PTY limit or CC, those are certain requirements that we would require. We are developing the requirements for the on what basis we will appoint or make an assessment who is deserving and who is not deserving of this thing. You've asked many questions, so I hope I'm not forgetting anything. Yes, this special chairperson, this issue that you raised around the special regime or dispensation for youth, it is something which will be part of the requirements. Remember, this is not just a political thing. It is a genuine issue that most of our fishing communities, the people that fish, are aging. We have many, many old people that are fishing now. For us to sustain this industry, you need to plan already now that younger people that come through must come through that fishing process. So they must. We are encouraging people in fishing communities that parents who are now in the fishing industry that they transfer those skills to younger people. So in that sense, we want to incentivize by making that as a criteria, incentivize that younger people get quotas and also women, because our policies and our terms conditions are written in such a way now that it becomes difficult for women to become part of fishing around this requirement that they. So there is not a special regime that we're talking about, but we are talking in the guidance from the ministry to say in our assessment ourselves is that the aging of the fishing industry, you need to have a planning now to bring younger people through the system. Chairperson, you've raised many times that good example of your cooperative in Upington. It is not by accident, it is close to where I was born. Those people are very clever in that area in the Northern Cape. So I take that as a compliment, and we hope that by this cooperative and the guidance from DTI that we prevent what is happening in Hamburg. Although the people themselves have wanted to have that big cooperative, we are saying you must have a manageable institutional organization to be able to manage this fishing, the rights that were possibly there. I'm just thinking if I just want to check if I've left out anything. I want to ask my colleague if you can have Chairperson with your permission if they want to add something.
Chairperson, it's a small decision. Especially on the issue of the support program for the small-scale fishing fisheries policy implementation, including the right selection process. This issue has been coming on our agenda for a number of years. And I'm happy with the explanation that Mr. Stevens has given to this House. And maybe to give meaning to this call for a comprehensive support program to fisheries, it might also be important that as a department we present you with what we are planning to have. In agriculture, we talk about the CASP program, we talk about Ilimadezima and many others. I think time has come for us to also present you with what we believe should respond to the needs of the fishing communities. And I'm happy that the Acting DG has alluded to the need for collaboration partnerships with other government partners, because this is not a new thing. We have done it in agriculture. And when we talk about cooperative development, agriculture has a program, DTI has got a program. So I think it will be a matter of bringing together what government has so that we have something that talks to the specific needs of the fishing sector. Thank you, sir.
Just
just on a point of clarity, something that they said.
Follow up.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I need to ask this, the explanation that was given out about the youth structures. Did I understand the minister right when he said in his speech that a certain amount of quotas was going to be ring-fenced for youth structures? What Mr. Stevens has said now, I can totally agree with, but I cannot agree with something that is a ring-fenced for youth structures. And I think this is not what the minister was meaning, what Mr. Stevens now said. So I need to have clarity on this. It's quite important. I mean, there's a total difference to say that we must empower the youth and help them. I agree with that totally. But to say that we are going to ring-fence quotas for youth structures is something totally different.
Mr. Sabariso, Mr. Abra, Mrs. Nyalungu, welcome, Mrs. Twala, and we did get your apology.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have taken note about the Seals and Seabirds Act. That one I will address it on another level. I need to say this, and I need to say this here now. It is for the first time in history that we do have a small-scale fishing policy. For the first time, after decades and decades and decades of fighting, in my time not being a member of parliament, but being a community activist. So for us to measure this policy, it will only be after the Right Allocation Act we can see, did this policy address the needs that we were crying out all these years? That's the reality of the matter. It doesn't just come out of the blue. It comes out of fight and us even resorted to court with the old deed department, who acknowledged historically disadvantaged fishing communities. I was involved, I don't talk out of the blue. Secondly, I need to say this, the department needs really to concentrate on the review and the amendments of the bill. It must come, because it has to acknowledge the history of this country along the coast. We need it to come, and we will welcome it, and we will make our relevant input to suit the historically disadvantaged community, and we are not going to apologize for that. The capacity, Mr. Stevens, we do have the capacity along the coast. People were wearing this water on this land. We do have the capacity. I welcome also the training and the human capital of the cost-cutting policy consideration. We welcome that because we never knew that it never happened along the coastline. We need to give you the relevant input where you are doing the right thing. What I need to stress, without giving you a confused message, yes, target groups need to be empowered, because along some of our communities, they are not women friendly. I think I'm the one who always raised the question of, if people say women need to go to the seawater, then sea harvest and I, they also need, those bosses also need to go to the seawater and lower Siana. So I always say that, and I will keep on stressing that. Because you have to consider, although we are talking 50% policy, which I'm an activist of that, we don't mean abuse us and give us an unfriendly policy that will make us see that we can't go into this sector because now I have to go to the sea. It must be on my own individual commitment and that I want to go and experience on the sea water as a woman. I want to be there. So what I want to say is, target group the youth. We need the skills of our forebearers to be maintained in our communities of the next generation. We need it. And I really need to say that we have already done that in some of our coastal parks, especially where we stay in our coastal communities. We are actively involving our youth because we need these skills not to just vanish. We need to keep our history and keep our forbearer skills so that it cannot die out. That's the culture of us. The question of consultants was also a thorny issue as lawyers, because the 2005 rights allocation, I will never forget that rights allocation. We nearly died after that rights allocation of 2005. It was so painful. After paying 10,000 for an application form with a consultant, just to lock out in the rights, it was painful for people who had two children. It was painful for us who've got poor families. It was very painful for people just know that they were done. So this process, you are on the right track. We can only measure you after implementation. We can't be due prophet now and say it will be wrong, it will be. How can it be wrong? And we didn't implement it yet. So reality, we need to talk reality, because we are talking about living human beings. And what we need to stress here is the financial support side. Provinces need to be informed about this cast and Ilimani sector that also needs to help the fishing sector, because remember this fishing department came 2009 to be incorporated into agriculture. So there is a fight in some provinces between your small farmers. It's always eye butting because you're hungry, you're poor. So between the small farmers and your small fisher. So there needs to be clarity. Distress to your province is that these funds also need to help small-scale fishers. But what you are not saying in this presentation, please clarify to this portfolio. What are you owing to those people who lost rights? And the species was also not relevant to be kept anymore. They are sitting with their boats. They are sitting with the capacity. They are still in the coastal communities, they know nothing else, and that's that boat they have. They lost capital. Are we going to have, at this department, a program that is going to address that? Because it was only the historically disadvantaged people who lost rights. They are both are there. They are there with their capacity, but nothing to do, and even the species, they cannot get anymore. Also give us clarity on that. We are talking real matter things.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Van Dalen, was your hand up? Oh, Honourable Abraham.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, I asked a direct question with regard to assistance to people in order to buy equipment in order to fish. My good old friend there says that they would like to come and advise us on these things, come and give us a briefing. But if you could, for the purpose of also the people that are sitting here, just say what are the programs that are there that they can access, and how can they access them? That is most important. You can have all the wonderful programs in the world, but if people cannot access them, if people don't know about it, where must they go? You know, it's like trying to catch a straw. So if you could please explain that. And then, Chairperson, there's one other problem here, and that is that there are some of our Tatars here who don't understand English or Afrikaans. Is there a possibility that in a crisp manner, within a matter of a minute or two, they could be advised in one of the indigenous languages, Isixhosa or isiZulu or something, as to what has happened here today and what it is all about? It will be appreciated. And then, Jefferson, there is another problem. The problem is that people seem to have many queries and questions. What I would like to know is that does the department have something like a help desk? If somebody feels aggrieved about something, if somebody does not understand something, is there a place where they can go to and seek assistance? Because again, you know, we can formulate the best ideas and the best policies, They are just as good as how people would understand them. So people on the ground need to understand that. Is there something like a ombudsman within the department? Any aggrieved party can go to that ombudsman or write to that ombudsman and expect that the problem that that person has placed on the table will be attended to. Because here we are friendly. If you can have the best policies in the world, the best legislation in the world, but if that does not give effect to satisfaction on the ground, then that best policy and that best legislation means nothing. You need to create happy people on the ground. So I'll be pleased if you could just do these few things for us, so that people know where they could complain about a problem, and the issue of the language, and of course, about caste, there was a specific question. So I'll be glad to know exactly what kind of assistance will be available, and whether it is only after the new bill is passed. It should be available now. I mean, there should be a scheme in the department now, which people can access. So let the people know what is available, and let it be in some way or the other communicated, that these are the sort of schemes that are available, and people can access them by doing A, B, C, D. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Nyalungu.
Thank you. Mine is just on the issue of communication. I heard you, Mr. Stevens, talking about maybe the boards or the flyers to the community. But I just want to emphasize the issue of community registration, because those registrations are using their languages so that they can be informed into the dates for applications, the closing date, and the necessary documents that are needed on that event. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Nyalungu. Honourable Stevens.
Yes, Chairperson, I just forgot to ask in my first round on this exemptions, those 137 number of communities. The numbers of communities that got exemption from the provinces, are they now included in this process? Did you also go to some of those communities during your process, and how will they be included in their process currently?
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Pilu Samaswani. Thank you, Honourable Pilu. Mine is only on page 14. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Bulletin 5. I just want to find out or to know what the mechanism did you put in place to prevent or eliminate the frontier. Because we know that even though our people are going to have these fishing rights, but the frontier still will be there. That's why I want to know what mechanism is in place to protect the frontier to come in. Thank you. Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Stevenson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members, and Chairperson.
Can I just, before you chip in, Stevenson, just on the fronting story, you know, as we speak now, a number of white commercial fishers, they are selling their boats. I don't know how many of us have encountered any such. I've heard a number of people coming, you know, black people saying they have had these offers to purchase boats. Now, for me, what that tells is a story that says you're going to have these black people having boats. They're not guaranteed that they're going to get rights allocated to them. But what happens now when they have these boats with them? They do not become an asset. They are more of a liability now, because
they shall be having nothing except that they shall be generating more and more costs in terms of servicing that loan. And to an extent, I'm asking myself a question, what do we do as a department? A message that must go out there to warn people not to be victims of having to buy goods. Again, it addressed the question raised by Mama of Ranting on squid. This fellow says in Port Elizabeth, there is an accountant fellow who has done a research to the point where there is over 95% of those that own boats who are squid are white. Now, squid is also supposed to be one of those species for rights to be allocated for. Now, on one hand, you are saying 70%, which is good, which is applauded. Nothing wrong, nothing criminal at all. But you have here 70% that must go to those small scale fisheries people. But on the other hand, the predicament that they will be confronted with is that they do not have boats. The line of march I gather is that allow these blackies to, these duckies to get their boats. I mean, they are fish, right? They do not have boats. They do not have any processing plants or facilities. They do not have access to markets. They do not even have finance. They have no research that they know of any particular species. For these five pillars, they talk to sustainable exploitation of any of our resources. Whether it is going to be fish or it's going to be crops or it's going to be, you know, gold or platinum or whatever, any of our resources, they will have to meet for me if they are to be sustainable. This is five pillars. Now, I don't know how we're going to deal with that one. I would be very keen to hear more from what the department has to say in that regard. Just some fronting. Because all what it will do at the end, our people will get the rights, and those rights very soon will go back to the white commercial fishers. That is what is going to happen. If we're not doing it right, if all the support program members are talking about are not attended to.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to start with the Honourable Member, the issue that Honourable Member Dahlen have raised, the issue about, unfortunately, I'm not a politician, I can't speak on behalf of the Minister, but as officials in the Department, there's no contradiction what Minister said in the portfolio, in the budget speech, and what I have said now. We are working out that modalities around all of the forms of right holding. But youth and women are those categories of people that we are earmarked for a special treatment or special dispensation. The modalities around that we have not finalized yet. So I just wanted to, so that maybe there must not be misunderstanding what I have tried to explain, to elaborate around why we're talking about the young people and women. The issue that the Honourable Member Palacio raised, that we must clarify to the portfolio, who lost rights, boats, lost capital, and what is the program to address those ones. We have been approached since I've been here now in 2009 by a number of people who have explained to us that they have lost their rights because of either they were late or some processes that have taken place around this thing. The unfortunate picture also, which I explained in the beginning, are many of the people who received rights have not utilized those rights. That's the other unfortunate thing.
However, we, because in December 31st, 2013, no one in the state sector will have rights. I think we must be very clear. These rights, when they were allocated for this period, and all of those rights, there is no one that legally have an expectation that their rights will be given to them as they were. That's why we're starting with this process. So anyone who lost out before, who are now current rights holders, and new entrants, all of them will start from a clean slate to apply for rights. That's what the MLRA says, and the policy says. So it's difficult for us now to come here and say, we will try to treat those people that have lost out in 2005, especially where now we're starting from a clean slate in the state sectors. So even everyone from the 1st of July who have interest, who are current rights holders in this sector, in these sectors, who are new entrants, who have lost out before, they all must apply. The only qualification I want to give, so that I'm not misunderstood, is that this small-scale fishing process, implementation plan, that is a process that we hope to be finalizing by the 31st of June. So, these small-scale fishers, many of them who are here, they might not be part of a competitive process. Because we are guided by the small-scale fishing policy. And while I'm talking about the small-scale fishing policy, in this to finalize this issue about youth and women, that is the basis where we talk about young people, because in that policy, it was emphasized that we must talk about young people and women that must benefit. On Abraham, I also, you see, the problem is myself, where I come from, I also can only be straightforward on certain things. And you want us to be very straightforward in the questions that you ask us. What are the services now in fisheries? Is what you ask. Now, we don't have special support services, financial or capital currently in fisheries for small-scale fisheries. The only instrument legally we have is providing people who don't have rights to give them exemption permits. And that is the 7,333 people that have exemption permits now. What did we do in 2009-10? We asked Treasury a special dispensation for the abalone fishers, where we provided them with financial support because that fishery was closed. Those are the only sector of fisheries that were given a specific financial support. The reason why we are now saying, and the imperative, the small-scale fishery policy, that we must have this comprehensive support program. And that what my colleague was said, the chief director of monitoring, control and surveillance, is that we must come and present what are these support services for us to successfully implement the small-scale fishing policy through this amendment. What are those support services that is required? We have identified those. We've costed them, and we're looking, hope to get the final report by the end of this month, 28th of June, to get the final report from those experts that are assisting us. In fact, we are going back to those fishers themselves who were part of that national task team to say to them, here is a draft support program. Do you agree? This is the support that you require to become a small-scale fisher. It will talk to boats, it will talk to the equipment, it will talk to training, talk to issues of market, of value, of access to market, because that is the most crucial part of where our fishers are not able to get value for their hard work when they go on fishing. Because they have, there's a middle person that takes their fish and sell it on the market, and they get the full scope, and then they get a very limited amount of money for the fish, for the artwork they've done. So, very simply, honorable member, we don't have the support services yet. We are negotiating internally in our department with CAP, Lima, Lichima, with Agri-BE Fund. Can we redirect some of those support services to fishers? Your very other straightforward question which I want to answer is we are setting up a help desk now in an operational center. We have a share call number, 086,000 fish, which basically anyone can call. It's 086,000-3474, where we carry half of the cost of phone call and person that phones us. And at that number, you can ask these questions. But Sue Middleton is a project manager for setting up the operational center, which will basically be that help desk. In the help desk, we will employ 7, in addition to the 19 fishery development workers that we have, and the 7 environmental officers that are at the coast. So we talk about a team of about 30 people, which will basically fundamentally be that, what we call, you've given us advice around calling it a help desk, but we call a rapid response unit that will go when people ask questions, will be able to be sent out in the fishing communities. These are all local people that have experience and expertise in the fishing industry. Then my sort of deadline, which I've given to our office, is by the end of this month, that rapid response unit must be operational in our operational center. But anyone now, including yourself, honorable members, if you want to ask anything, because we also want to test if our share code number is picked up easily, quickly, and that you get the response that is required. It's 086,000-3474. So anyone can call that number. I hope I was able to, honorable Steiner left, but the question that she has asked, let me first go to Honorable Nyalangu. Thank you very much. In fact, am I pronouncing it wrong? Nyalungu. Nyalungu, call of mom. We have now a busy signing of an agreement with DCIS for us to use community radio stations to communicate our messages. That hopefully will also be concluded by 15th of June. But we have realized that is the best way to communicate to fishing communities. We have identified all the community radio stations, all the community newspapers in all of the fishing communities, and those are the areas we are not going to deal with. With respectful, some of the journalists here, of the Burger or Cape Times or Aris or Sunday Times, we are dealing with those local community stations and community radios, community radio stations and community newspapers. Honorable Van Dalen has advised us to put it in the Sun and Daily Voice also. We will consider that newspapers. They, in the 137 communities, with Honorable Steiner Verst, in fact, that 7,333 fishers who have exemptions now should be the fundamental beneficiaries of the small-scale fishing policy. That is basically our group of small-scale fishers. That is the 1,500 people that are in internal leave, the 4,400 Eastern Cape, and the 1,200-300 also in KZN. So those are the target audience for the small-scale fishing policy implementation. Honorable members, this issue about fronting, it's and when we say, honorable member, that we in page 14,
we talk about the relations of blessing. So we want to do it frankly, preemptively, so that when you apply, you don't apply on someone else's behalf. We want to prevent that. So we will, if someone applies, someone, yeah, I want to mention someone's name here. But if that person applies, or the entity applies, that relationship between the applicants, the right holders, the individuals, the companies, will all be investigated. Both your background, have you been in the fishing industry, what is your role, have you any relationship with staff members, what your relationship with bigger companies, all of those things. Are you a beneficiary of government pension or whatever social grant from government? All of those things we'll investigate. Then we can prevent the non-qualifying people to get the right. Now, when you have the right, is what the chairman asked, how do you prevent that people don't sell those rights on to bigger companies? Because in the sport industry, it's a very good example, chairperson, is that our own information tells us the current rights holders, they get Section 21 and they intend, they say no, they are not going to apply because they're going to sell those rights back from the potential community rights holders that will get it. Now, we, in our process around Section 21, you can buy the rights back, you are just going to waste your money. Because we are not going to, and this is part of the things that we want to put in the amendment of the legislation, it's around this called Section 21. When and how we can tighten that part of the Section 21 in the transfer of rights, that we don't allow people to sell, like when you get the RDP house, you are not allowed to sell that house for 8 years. And those are the things that we are also considering. Maybe because of the limitations of the amendment, we can't put those things in, but we want to put a limitation in around what period of time you can sell your rights. So that you prevent someone just getting the rights on behalf of someone else and then get paid for it. Those are the things that we're trying to prevent. Firstly, is to prevent people who are fronting to get rights, and when they have the rights, that they don't be able to sell it on willy-nilly without some consequences. Thank you, Chairperson.
Members, we are almost close to breaking. I guess the issues raised by Manuel Palisa. In 1993, in a document called the Reconstruction Development Program, what the ANC did was to resolve that in transforming our fisheries sector, we must stop the year or years, if you remember the quota. But also it said those coastal communities that live on fish, they are the ones who must benefit the most. What we did 2005, we transformed from year on year to medium to long term. But unfortunately, it continued with business as usual. The big industry players, the INJ, the Sea Harvest, the Oceanus, they continued to work as if nothing had happened. What this policy is saying now is addressing that issue. It is saying 70% of those that must benefit out of this process of rights allocation must be those that are stationed in the coastal communities. Yourself. That's what this small-scale fisheries policy is saying. That's what this legislation is also intended to do. That's what is going to happen by the time these applications are opened. The target is those coastal communities.
that must benefit the most, 70% of which are yourself. So in a nutshell, I can safely say that you are on track, Mr. Fandala, in addressing exactly the issue you are raising. The members have done it 1993 or 1994, but only two years now. There is no recognition. But I must also mention, as far back as then, Dr. Hosting, as far back as 1993, that same policy framework said, combine agriculture, fisheries and forestry under one department. But only corrected that 2009. Again, it's better delayed than never. Again, the point I was raising, members, to avoid any further fronting, I think we need to be very, very close in our oversight visit, in our oversight work. Because fronting has caused so much harm for our people. On top of that, some of these business people who are very unscrupulous, who are very wrong, as it were, they did not end at only fronting. They even went as far as making fraud, and fraud is a punishable crime. We cannot investigate Kalahari fisheries forever. They must be brought to book and they are arrested. They are a case in point on a number of other cases of fraud that has been taking place in our country on the very issue that you are about on fisheries. And I think we are done for now. As again we said, it is only a briefing. We shall continue getting more of those briefings until we get all of these things right. Whereas we hear what the department is saying, some of the things are still being thought out. They are still a work in progress. By the time they are almost done and for sure, ready to go out. For instance, the form. We did say day one we came here that the form must be simplified. We did say that on day one we came as Committee of Parliament, in charge of fisheries among others, that the people must now be stopped from traveling from all over the country to Cape Town. It is a department that must go out to the communities themselves. We did say that, and it is happening now. I think we should stop it for now on that note. That number that was given, 086-000-3474. Only when you call from your landline at home or your telecom line, it then gets to be cheaper. We all know that a number of us use cell phones these days. But when you call from your cell phone, it is not going to be cheaper. It is going to be the normal cost. And again, I repeat, only when you call from your landline at home or from a telephone directly from a telephone booth there, that it gets to be cheaper. So that you don't go out with an impression that you said it is going to be a shared cost. It is not shared when it is out of your cell phone. In future, whenever we come to Parliament, it happens also in your own houses. When anybody comes to your house with a hat on, that person, you tell him, it can only be him, that you must take off your hat in my house. So that in future we respect the house. This is your Parliament. Without you, we are never going to be able to be here. This is your Parliament. And the first people must respect that Parliament is yourself. Then we fall. Members, I think we are done for now. As I said, this process is an ongoing process. The one last point I wanted to raise, members, is an invitation by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. That invitation has since been communicated to all of us. On the 19th of June, 20th of June, South Africa is going to open again those claims for land. On the 19th, it is expected, you remember 100 years ago, on the 19th of June, Native Land Act was signed into law. A number of our people, in fact, 87% of the land was taken away from yourselves and your forefathers by those that came to settle from Europe in our country. So South Park, in particular the Khois and Fens, those that did not submit, in fact, the land was literally taken away even from the Khois and the Fens long before 1913. This process is now going to be reopened for our people to apply again, to submit applications, or rather, for claims. If you know that your father, your grandfather, your great-grandfather, and so on and so forth, they had a piece of land elsewhere, the time is now going to be reopened again, if you did not apply. So next week, on the 19th, President Zuma is going to sign again into law that process be reopened on the 20th, we shall come back in the National Assembly. It's going to be a big function. You are more than welcome to indicate your interest to come and participate, to be in the gallery. There's going to be such a big program going on next week. But our committee is it next week? No, week after next, sorry. On the 20th, week after next. Next week our committee is meeting again on the 11th of June. As far as I am concerned, from where I am seated, the meeting is adjourned. One last point I wanted to mention is that when I see all the hungry faces, yet there is no food. There was no food made for, or rather arranged for, in fact, for ourselves.